I remember telling Mike the Brewer, because he was saying, man, if we can have people pause before they throw it away, or when they crumple it, they feel just a little bit bad, then we got them. So let's aim for that, you know, where they almost just want to keep it because I enjoyed the beer and I'm going to get more. Yeah, it feels weird to throw this art away.
Hello. Okay. I am so excited because we're getting these out. This is happening. I'm finally being able to share all this stuff with you guys. And so I'm just really pumped over here. So welcome to the Craft Brewers Creative Podcast, a Beer Can Lover production. It is the craft beer podcast for lovers of all things creative and visual and artistic in the craft beer industry. Not necessarily focused on the beer, but beer, obviously, a big part of it too. I'm your host, Jenna Steele, and I'll be here this week, next week, and every week. Super excited to bring on and chat with other beer can lovers, brewers, artists, and, you know, other people in the industry. It's been so much fun, you know, going through this process and realizing that, you know, I started off thinking, okay, it's going to be just the brewers and the artists, or it's going to be just like, you know, marketing managers, just this, just that. And it's just so quickly I'm seeing how many amazing, relevant people I want to interview and have on, and that, I mean, it's just so relevant and they just have so much to say about the topic, whether they're, you know, homebrewers or just drinkers, casual drinkers or whatever, or if they do something else in the industry. It's just, I don't know, it's just kind of taken off a little bit with ideas, and just, I'm just getting really excited for everything. So we are here to get to know the stories and the people behind some of our favorite breweries, beers, labels, etc. And I'm hoping, you know, it seems I'm getting like half and half reactions here when I'm talking to people about interviewing them, and I'm like trying to low-key gauge, especially if we're doing it remotely. I'm trying to like low-key gauge. I'm like, so do you want to like crack open a beer during this, or is this like 11 a.m. we're doing this business time? Like, what's the vibe? And so it's really funny because it's always different. I'm always just trying to gauge the vibe here. On one, I was like shotgunning with someone, and then others, it's like I feel like super professional. And so this is just really fun, and I'm just kind of rolling with it. Oh, so that you do not miss out on the upcoming episodes and everything else I've been working on, and you don't miss the upcoming interviews and other content, please remember and just please go ahead like now, if you are feel so inclined, to click subscribe or follow, whatever the good old button is, wherever you are listening to this podcast, so that you stay up to date with it and so that I feel nice, warm, fuzzy feelings in my heart, because that would make me happy. which I know is your main goal in life. Listen to podcasts, make Jenna happy. Okay. So also, once again, this is obviously a audio system ordeal here, and talking about something artistic and visual and the artwork can be confusing. So I urge you to go ahead and also just follow me on Instagram at Beer Can Lover, because like every week as I'm posting these episodes, I am also uploading and posting like the relevant images of what we're talking about. So you'll hear some of the beers that I'm going to talk about today. So then when I put this out, I'll post the images of those beers so that you can just easily see everything together, or, well, I guess you got to tap out of whatever app you're listening to this in and go into something else, but hopefully try to make it a little bit easier. I know that an audio platform for a visual thing might seem counterproductive, but I don't think it is. So here we are. And if you have any questions, comments, you want to yell at me, you want to love me and do whatever, or if you have a specific brewery you want me to interview, there's a specific brewery you love, if you want to come on, whatever, just shoot me an email at pod@beercanlover.com. So just pod@beercanlover.com. Would love to hear from you. And with that, I'm getting really excited to just get going, getting started with today's interview. So today I'm very excited because I have on Adam Squared. So Adam Eckerd and Adam Balding from Crank Arm Brewery in downtown Raleigh, North Carolina. Adam Eckerd is the co-founder and co-owner, and then Adam Balding is their designer. So he has his own company called Sunday Gravy, and through that he does all of the artwork for Crank Arm. And I'm really excited to get to talk to them. And God, I'm kind of nervous because it's two people at once. Don't know how it's going to go. I hope I can hang. And yeah, you just have a lot of questions for them, especially having them both on together. I feel like the other ones I've done where it's either been one or the other, I know something's holding back. Like, I know someone's holding back something. It's like, you know, the artist doesn't want to piss off the brewer. Brewer doesn't want to piss off the artist, or well, that one less so. But I feel like having them both on, I can kind of pick at it a little bit. So we shall see. Without any further ado, I would now love to get going with this interview today. So we have Crank Arm Brewing, and here we go. Thank you guys so much for being on here. I'm like really excited to talk to you.
All right.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. So remind me of, so what are your guys' positions again? What do you do at the brewery?
Adam Eckerd, co-owner, co-founder, head janitor, Crank Arm Brewing.
And what about you?
I've got Saturday's Gravy, the design firm. So I've been working with Crank Arm since, what was that, 6 months after you guys opened.
2014 then.
All right.
We opened in July of 2013.
All right.
Oh, wow. So Crank Arm opened, Adam, you opened this, started 2013, 14, you said?
2013, yep.
Okay. And then about 6 months later, you bring on second Adam with his design.
It actually just first started, I bartended there for a year and a half, and then we kind of talked some different projects here and there. And it wasn't until I just looked up when we started kicking off the White Wall label at September 2017.
That was. Oh, you'd done some work for bottle labels before that for us, for the Oak Spoke series
right.
and whatnot. So
right.
Probably 2015, 16, I'm guessing.
Yeah. So what did your cans and everything look like beforehand? Were you distributing? Were you going just silver with a Sharpie?
So the first can we ever did, which sort of kicked it off, was our Rickshaw Rye that we released, at least. And that was just sort of the brand standard. So a color with a circle with our logo, and just getting something into a 12-ounce can to test to see how it would do for us. And then after that, we slowly changed formats to 16-ounce cans with the advent. We did our first New England can and our Wet Road can. What year was that, Adam? Was that 18?
Yeah, I believe so.
It was 17 or 18. I can scroll back and look through Instagram to actually tell you when it was. It's funny. And measure things by social media.
Oh, it's the only way I can do anything. Yeah.
Hey, wait, when do we do this? When do we do this stuff here last? So yeah, that was that. And then sort of as that took off pretty amazingly, you know, good branding, good art sells beer as well as good beer selling beer. So yeah, so I'm scrolling back. I believe it was 18, but it might have been 17. We did it for our anniversary party, released Road Hazard. And that really got the juices flowing and sort of proved to the partnership and everyone that crazy, fun, colorful cans move.
Yeah, absolutely. They're my favorite. Like, if it's not colorful, I mean, it could either be really simple or really colorful, but fun colors make the cans.
Exactly. Yeah, it was the Road Hazard can that really, Adam said, hey, let's do the Road Hazard and, let's see what you got. Because we went from that solid color that everyone's kind of known with the white wall, the rickshaw and unicycle. And, when we first started doing that, it was, I feel like it didn't seem that long ago, but I feel like the can art then was fairly simple block color. And then, what if we tweak it? What if we get a little crazy? And so I sent that idea with the Road Hazard. Like, what if it's just all these different hazards that bicyclists have to deal with? And, I was thinking maybe large pine cones and snakes, taxis, ooh, maybe even a Yeti. Now we're getting crazy. And Adam saw that and he's like, no. Let's do a shark with a laser on its head and let's do a guy rappelling. And then it just blew up from there. And
I love that.
He's with it. Here we go.
So the concept was dumb ways to die on a bicycle on psychedelics.
Oh my gosh, I love that. Okay, so
and that's
I've been a little nervous to talk to you guys because I know a big theme that you have going on is the bikes. Like, yeah. I can see them. There's one and like hanging behind you. You got some things going on behind you over here that I can see. And I know you just did like a bike ride thing and there's gears everywhere and that's like your logo. So I can do a lot of things. I can't ride a bike.
Oh no. You can't ride at all?
I can't ride a bike. At this point, I don't want to learn. Because I'm like, at this point, I feel like it's a personality trait.
No, you can do it. I believe in you.
I believe in you. I had to, but...
Yeah.
But, whatever. I've gotten this far in life. We can get
it. We're missing out on one of the greatest joys in life is the freedom of riding a bicycle.
I know.
Like, because running is boring. And
difficult.
Yeah. And like painful on the joints. But like riding a bicycle is freedom. It's like that first freedom you get as a kid, like being able to like get around without your mom taking you somewhere or walking there. And, you're never too old to learn. And,
I never had that.
Oh yeah, you can. I believe in you.
The good thing since it's not like swimming, it's not like you're going to drown out there because you don't know how to do it.
Unless you ride your bike into water and you can't swim. But
I started scuba diving at 11. I'm a professional scuba diver. I literally went.
Oh man. Well,
like I'm good with a lot of things. Bike riding is not one of them. So that's the funny thing. Like, I don't mind drowning. I do mind the bike. Like, I won't fall off. Like, I can't fall off a bike. Like, it'll destroy me.
Can't do everything, I guess.
But yeah, so I've been a little nervous to talk to you guys.
No, don't worry. It's all good. We don't hate. So I'm looking at the date, and it looks like we released Road Hazard at our fifth anniversary party on September 22nd, 2018. And we also released the Wet Road can, which was sort of fun. It's our wet hop that we release every fall. And it's like some rainbow colored hops raining from the sky with lightning bolts. So those were our first two 16 ounce and crazy cans. And then everything sort of snowballed from there. Yeah, Adam, the next can we did was
I think it was Motivator.
Motivator was next or was it Tandem?
I want to say Motivator because here's why. After we did those first two, we had a color palette, kind of figured, let's go from here. Maybe not, now that I think about it, because it could have been, it doesn't matter.
I'm scrolling. We'll know in a second.
Because Brutal Crash was in there too.
Yep.
See, I don't like the Brutal Crash.
Yeah, that is your worst nightmare.
What's that? What kind of beer?
It's a brewed IPA. It's an extinct IPA. One of the fastest fads in craft beer that's ever happened, brewed IPAs.
What is that even? What do you mean brewed IPA?
Brut. So it's a dry IPA. You can use champagne yeast or, you know what was next, Adam? It was Icicle. We'd taken the bottle label for Icicle and put it in a can.
Which technically, I guess if we want to rewind again, that might have been one of the very first labels we ever did. And we had... you know, there was no plan as far as, all right, what's the brand? What's the story? What's the narrative we're going to say? It was just, hey, you kick this out by Friday. And so it was,
and I wasn't even involved in that. They had
I think that was,
like Natalie and Mike had sort of like gotten with you about that. And of course it was a 22 ounce bottle, so it didn't do real well, but talk about a design that transferred very well to cans and is one of our most anticipated seasonals of the year. Like, sells out quickly and people really just like, one, it's a beautiful can, two, a delicious beer, and it's very seasonally appropriate. So, then Tandem was like our, I guess that'd be our fifth beer that came out, and also on that crazy train of designs, Max so Headroom Siamese Cats.
Yeah. That's the crazy part, Jenna, is that, you know, typically designers either want that freedom to just roll and be trusted 100%. And it's a freedom with that. Or the other option is the client knows exactly what they want to a T and just spill it out. So at the beginning, it was kind of one of those, like after, or when we got rolled into Tandem, it became one of those, so where are we? You know, am I free to do whatever? But Adam was so excited to jump in that pool of wildness. And when I was talking with him, like, yeah, let's go crazy. But let's try to have it make sense. He's like, well, I got it for Tandem. It's this. And I made it into a poster because it's the most absurd, wild, ridiculous thing I've ever heard from a client. But it's two Siamese cats riding a tandem bicycle through a rainbow field of puppies, all with a max headroom feel.
All with a what?
What? All with a max headroom. Yeah. So some of the younger generation may not know what that is, but it's from the early mid 80s from MTV. And it was like this digital AI kind of first of its kind. And it glitched out, but it was very blocky, had kind of that grid, like that classic 80s feel.
Okay, wait, I'm trying to pull up a picture of it.
Yeah, when you see the background of Max Headroom, and that was just sort of, world. I'm old.
Okay, me wait, too. I'm on Untappd. I'm looking at Tandem.
Yep.
Wait, where are the rainbow puppies or
kids? Well, that didn't happen.
We pulled.
I was like, wait, am I missing something?
Nope.
We tried to get everything in there, and then it was, all right, well, what if we tried this? Which is the funny part when people ask me, man, where do you come up with these ideas? Like, well, oddly enough, it comes from the wild dreamland of Adam Eckhart.
I just get
the privilege of trying to
translate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am not a skilled artist. I'm a good concept person. So that's, I think what's really great about our relationship is that like we work through things and sometimes we knock it out in the first time. Sometimes it's five, sometimes it's 10, sometimes it's 1,000, but usually like, you know, thematically, once we sort of established that we went from that can being the solid or watermarked can to the sort of animal kingdom of wild colors when we have the palettes and the cycling and then the names that sort of correspond. So
listen to all those elements.
Yeah. And you know, on top of that, like we sort of, some of them we do spirit animals and some we don't, some of it's, you know, and a lot of them might have even more concept behind it than it even appears. Like, the more notable one to me is our Vienna Lager valve stem. Like there's a lot of elements in that design that correspond to the area and region of where the beer was initially produced in Vienna, you know, in Austria. So the dog in the picture is a Vienna or an Austrian black and tan hound. You know, it sort of looks like this. So it's actually from the region. And then the design, the zigzag in the background is actually from a church in Vienna. Is it St. Stephen's? Is that what it is, Adam?
So, yeah, one of the well-known.
So Adam had actually thrown that in and then just said, hey, look at this. This is, you know, so, you know, very much.
I love
this
that.
Is 100% a collaboration of, and there's more to it than just doing crazy things. There's usually something sneaky in there or something that corresponds to the style of beer or the idea behind it. So it's not just, you know, an accident or just something crazy. There's a little bit more to it. So,
yeah, I love that so much. And so like right now I'm looking at heavenly suspension. Yeah. And I'm like, what? I don't even know what's going on here. It's like I love it. It's like the, winged angel astronaut bicyclists in the galaxy.
So the name of that beer originally came from the fact that we use galaxy hops in it. Mm-hmm. So that sort of gave us the space feel. And then more so was that it was using the word heaven. So that's angels. So angels in heaven on bicycles, although some people have said they look like Teletubbies, but that was not anything that I had, or I think Adam had thought of. I think it's the colors on there. So, so with that galaxy and heavenly thing.
As a Teletubby girl myself.
Okay. No, okay. We're good. All right. Good. But on top of that, so you've got, you know, the haze is a suspended protein. So it's like all those aspects of the name tied in with the theme. So it's crazy, but it's, they all sort of play on them.
I love it. They're all so good.
Yep. So alien angels in outer space. Yep.
Like Sprocktoberfest.
Yeah, and that's another fun one. So
munch it all, muck it all.
Huck it all.
Sorry.
Huck it all. Yep.
Sorry. The letters are fantastic.
So let's rewind to like so really fun thing with Sprocktoberfest was that, you know, it's a play on the word for Oktoberfest, but in the word sprocket. So in that, you've got the monkey from
Monkey Shines, which is another 80s film.
On top of that, we were talking. So the idea we would joke about is, have you ever seen Saturday Night Live and Sprockets? So Mike Myers and was it Dana Carvey?
I think so.
Yeah. They would do this like two Germans and they would, now is the time on Sprockets when we dance. And so it was sort of like taking those things and playing around with it. And then the, you know, of course the flag in the background is the Bavarian flag, which you use for Oktoberfest. So that was a really, really fun one. And that one actually went pretty quickly. I mean, and I thought it was pretty clever. Adam, you know, had taken that flag and then did a little play with making it, you know, interchanging sprocket. Gears, cogs, sprocket. So
yeah.
So that was definitely a fun and quick collaboration. But if you ever seen the poster for Monkey Shines, that's what those monkeys were inspired by. So it's one of those little monkeys that you hit it on the head and he's like, he does the little timing and you hit him and you go, that's sort of where that was inspired. But we put different instruments in their hands and put them on unicycles to sort of make it a little more fun too.
So. I love it. And then like,
and then Huck It All.
Yeah.
That was last year. I mean, what rhymes with Huck and what you wanted to say in the middle of a pandemic. So that name came from the inspired by the frustrations of the pandemic and wanting to jump off of things and what better things jump than a frog.
And
so,
then, and so what's in that beer?
It is it's a hazy session IPA. So it's nice and light and springy like. So
I thought it was going to be like, you just shoved a bunch of stuff in there.
No, we didn't huck a bunch of stuff in it.
I was like, how carefully brewed was this?
We tend to, if we put a lot of stuff in a beer, it's usually thought of. Yeah, no, it's a nice, fun, hazy session IPA.
That's awesome.
So
I'm also looking, I didn't realize that your tap handles were also the same crank brewing. I love the yellow. It's so much fun. How did that decision come to be?
So that was actually really easy.
Is it like beer or do you just like bright?
So the yellow is actually the yellow from the Tour de France, the yellow jersey. Mm. So when we were starting Crank Arm initially, we started as a rickshaw company, myself and Dylan ran a rickshaw company and we used the yellow for like the Tour de France and Lance Armstrong, who hadn't been exposed yet for using, performance enhancing drugs. Mm. And then also it was like the yellow taxi cab and that's where the checker comes in as well. So it's sort of a play on both things, both, you know, cycling and a taxi cab. And, that's where that crank arm yellow came, which now is like we have a Pantone for it. But like there's like 19 different crank arm yellows here. And our tap handle is also physically is a crank arm. So we've tapped a crank arm with that head on the top.
Adam B is like, no, there's one standard yellow.
Oh, I wish.
Yeah, no,
there's
like 90,000 yellows. It's just like snow. And yeah. So
I love that. So, okay. So you said that you originally started, you had a, what's it called again? The
pedicab rickshaws.
Yeah.
That was the first phase of the business. It was always planned to open the brewery, but the first little aspect was that we were, you know, cycling enthusiasts, but the rickshaws were like our little bootstrap like way, which we've now are about to probably, we've closed the business for operation, but we're about to probably like permanently close that portion.
Oh, really? I thought,
yeah, it's just like not feasible.
We're your DD.
Yeah. Well, the thing was, you know, at the time there wasn't a lot of ways to get around downtown that were quick and easy. And now we have like a bike ride share and Lime bike scooters. And there's, you know, Uber and all these things that didn't exist at the time when we initially were downtown, you know, 11. So the concept for Crank Arm started in 09. 11 is when we launched Crank Arm Rickshaw. 13 is when we opened up the brewery. So in the...
That's so fascinating that you always had the brewery coming.
Yeah, that was the idea from the get-go, was that in 09 was that we were going to open a brewery, and then just the concept, it came soon after. Yeah. You know, a cycling pedestrian friendly brewery in downtown Raleigh, and then, you know, the different phases that we went through to get where we are today.
Yeah. So were you brewing beforehand, and did you work in other breweries? Are you a home brewer? Like, how did you land into
brewing? So I was a home brewer, and was initially going to be the head brewer for us. But as we were on our journey, we met Michael Morris, and he came on board, and he's our head brewer. Michael's now been brewing up professionally for years and years, over 20 years now.
Wow.
So, you know, that's another collaboration. You know, Mike very much, you know, formulates recipes. We tweak things and work together on doing those things. So, you know, he'll have an idea, I'll have an idea, and then we'll just sort of work it down if it's not a traditional style of beer, you know, which a lot of times we have that root based in tradition, and then we tweak it a little bit, you know, whether we're doing what all the crazy kids are doing with lactose and souring and, you know, dry hopping and all the different techniques to morph a beer into something more than just something that tastes like the base beer.
Yeah. So I gotta ask real quick, am I the only one who's like so full of sours lately? I'm like, I don't know if I could do anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. you know, right now is sour season, and for us, it's that lagers and hazy IPAs that people are drinking a ton of from the seasonal drinker aspect. So I don't know. I've been drinking sours for like 18 years. Is it something I go to every day? No. I mean, I drink a Fooder lager or a Pilsner on a day-to-day basis, just because they're easy, crisp, clean, and delicious. But I don't know. It seems like the people are drinking a lot of sours, especially here in the hot South. So,
I mean, I'm drinking them a lot too. I just think that I think that I'm reaching a limit of like,
and that can happen, you know, for me, I like to drink a lot of different stuff. So I keep myself from burning out, because you know, I remember when we opened, the craze was like double West Coast IPAs, like, which are coming back pretty strongly, but like, that was it. Like, oh, you don't have a double IPA. It's not 10,000 IBUs. I don't want to drink it. Now, like I said, it's coming full circle, but that trend has sort of changed.
Yeah.
You know, when we opened sour beer, it took us a year to produce our first sour beer. We were doing traditional barrel aged sours. They take a long time to make. They're, you know, a little more complex than, you know, say a kettle sour or a goza, something of that nature, and tend to be a little less acidic depending on what's going on. But, you know, yeah, I mean, you drink too much of anything or stick in one style long enough, you might burn out on it. I mean, and that's why variety is the spice of life.
Yeah, that's why we need craft beer. So Adam B, so what were you doing before you started working with them? Have you always worked, you know, with breweries doing beer labels, or, you know, how'd that go? Like, how did you get involved? Are you a beer person yourself, like from a consumer point of view?
Yeah. I mean, I started out a little, you know, drinking a little more than the run of the mill stuff, but it was right when I started with working with them as a bartender, like learning more about what's what, how it's done, and why I like it. That's kind of that definitely fueled that aspect. And then I was always doing design. I've been in design world for over 20 years and worked with Pepsi, Pizza Hut, Whole Foods, a whole bunch of different big retailers. And the interesting thing with labels is that it's a weird throwaway art. And I think it's one of its only kind, you know, that you don't save a bag of chips because you like the artwork on it, but a can, you know, at least back in our day, it was cool to put them up on your kitchen cabinets, you know, after you, you know, to kind of show off not only the kind of beers I like, but maybe the can. And one that sticks out to me is, again, back in the 80s, it does make me feel old. All the 80s references I've made. So hold
I don't get any of them. I'm just
I know. So I'm gonna bring you into it.
Everyone's googling Google. Yeah. What the heck is he talking about? Wait, it's so old it's not even on Google.
Oh man. My God. Back in like the early mid 80s, Pepsi did a little can extravaganza that wasn't their typical can. They ventured out into like this neon kind of feel. They changed their logo neon. Their can went to like a dark blue and almost a purple, and they added in light blue and pinks. But the crazy part was that you could take, they did three different kinds just with different lines going around. But I don't know how someone found it or how it leaked out, but I remember friends telling me, make sure you try to get the three different ones in the 12 pack. And when you would, you could stack them different ways. And the weird part was that it would spell out sex on three of them.
Oh my God.
Just the way the curve.
That was totally on purpose.
Exactly.
But that's so funny to know that someone did that.
Doesn't that blow your mind that someone's sitting there, a goofy designer, and be like, you know what I'm going to do? And the client's never going to know. My boss is never going to know. I'm just going to do this. And I'll tell all my friends. But when I first saw that, I thought, man, I love the idea that you could put art, hide it. And then if people figure it out, they do. If they don't, ooh, either way.
I love that. It's even like more fun if like no one really knows about it, but it's exactly just there. I love that so much. Yeah, I mean, that's why, you know, I just think it's so much fun. And that's how I kind of ended up in the industry, because, you know, it's not that I even love drinking beer that much. It's more that I just love the industry because of the creative parts and how much room for creativity there is, the fun colors, the, you know, how every brewery can have its own vibe, have its own, you know, community and culture. But so much of it comes through with the cans. And so if, you know, you have, you know, local people, you know, they come, you know, they have the whole vibe of the place, the bikes, the everything, but, you know, they go home. If they bring home, you know, a 4-pack, they can bring it home with them. It's like, or if you're in a store as a, if, you know, if I'm just looking at shelves or in a fridge, it's like, even from a marketing point of view, it's like, I want the fun thing. I'm going to grab that. But it brings the whole personality of everything kind of home with you. And it's just, yeah, it's so much fun. Like, yeah, I'm not going to save this can that I'm holding.
If it had a polar bear on it, you'd save it, right? The polar bears from Coke. Like, that's a thing. There's definitely been.
They do little brands, fun things like that. Exactly. Yeah,
and that's like, put your name on it. Yeah,
it's like, while the, you know, the ubiquitous Coca-Cola, like that swoosh and how it is, like you're saying, it's not savable. But with craft beer, we're trying to make things that, you know, are memorable, you know, repeatedly. And that's the thing. And maybe people are recycling, maybe they're saving them. But like, you know, I don't know. Have you ever seen the Flaming Lips play live? Do you know who they are? The band, the Flaming Lips? No. Okay. We'll Google that too. They're a fun live band. And one of their things that they do, like, so when you go see most bands, there's a finale, right? And there's like the fireworks and all the big stops come out. Well, when you go see the Flaming Lips, every song is like that. So like one song, he's in the giant bubble. One song, he's riding a unicorn with Pegasus and shooting fireworks. One song, I mean, just always crazy things. And I think that like some brands, like they have that standard and like, so they're just doing their regular song, but like, it's fun to do a finale every time and just sort of have that like exciting thing all the time. So I don't get why, you know, Coke doesn't do more fun things like polar bears all the time, you know, or, you know, it just
instead like of having a rubber duck in the spring or something. I don't know.
But obviously they're doing something right. And you know, they're a worldwide brand, you know, barring not putting cocaine in their beer anymore, or in their soda
and their beer anymore.
We don't do that.
Well, we only have Coke because the beer industry gave us canning and bottling. didn't it? And so we wouldn't even have that if it wasn't for beer.
I think the first canned product was for a beverage. Yeah, it was a beer. Over 100 years ago, something like that. I remember National Beer Can Day. So yeah, it was, they would put food in there
when
first.
That day?
Right.
Yeah, what day is that? I usually celebrate it. So once again, I can scroll back and look through my Instagram memories and it'll remind me.
Started to know what time things are is, do you get the like messages that are like, you know, this day, 2 years ago, 4 years ago?
I'm looking up National Beer Can Day right now.
That notification though, I'm like, oh shit, that was 4 years ago.
Killer.
So National Beer Can Day is January 24th and it, yep. And that's when you celebrate the monumental occasion of the first beer. It was Google's amazing, right? It was New Jersey-based brewery called Kruger's released the beer can in 1935.
Kruger.
But
bottling was before that, right?
Correct. Yep. Things were bottled way before that. So sales of canned beer exceed that of bottles for the first time in 1969. In 2002, and this was the first canned beer, craft beer that I'd ever had, was when Dale's Pale Ale was released in cans. And a fun fact with that is, you know, as an avid mountain biker, that was definitely one of the things that was appealing about Dale's Pale Ale. One, it was a delicious pale ale, and two, it was in a can. So when we were backpacking, mountain biking, whitewater kayaking, you know, you don't want to bring glass with you. Obviously, it breaks, it hurts you. So I would take it, like if I was on a hike, I'd throw a couple cans of Dale's in my backpack. Or if I was mountain biking, you know, especially in the mountains of North Carolina, I would throw a can of Dale's in my Camelback and ride up the top of the mountain, pop the beer, crush that, chill for a couple minutes, and then have a nice little ride down the mountain. 2002.
Riding is just like,
well, no, just one beer. I'm a big boy. I can drink a beer.
Oh no, for me, I'm just like, I'm gonna fall over.
Yeah, I didn't say slam it. I didn't say, yeah, it's like a probably 5.5% pale ale. Yeah. I could drink that and ride okay.
Yeah. Do you have beer slings that's like the neoprene that you shove with shove full of cans?
Yeah, no, not really. Like for this, I mean, I was definitely just taking one in my Camelback because you want to stay a little lighter. Didn't want to have a bandolier and get at the top of the mountain, get drunk and have to walk my bike down. So this is just a nice little, you know, like snack.
Someone just sent me a couple of those like things. I'm like, what do I do with this?
Don't they know I don't even ride bikes?
Yeah. I'm like, I didn't even know what it was for a long time. And then I'm like, I'm doing what with this? Anyways. Okay, I want to know for both of you though. Well, you're in Raleigh. When have you always been in Raleigh? When did you land there? Why Raleigh?
Did we lose?
I moved to Raleigh in 1999. So I've been here over 20 years now.
And where are you originally from?
All over the place. I was in upstate New York till I was 15, and then moved to Topsail Beach after that, and then went to East Carolina University. And then moved back to Wilmington and then here to Raleigh. So I've been a little bit all over the place in North Carolina.
Oh, wow.
But Raleigh's been my home for 22 years now.
Cool. Where in upstate New York were you?
This little tiny town, the only Steven town on earth. And it's pretty much right smack dab in the middle between Albany, New York and Pittsfield, Massachusetts, the base of the Berkshire Mountains.
Wait, it's the only what town?
Steven town.
What is that?
Stephen Town. It's just the only Stephen Town, only town in the entire world that's named Stephen
Town. Oh.
That's its claim to fame.
Interesting. Yeah, there's like a Springfield in like 48 states or something.
Right, correct. Yeah, so that is definitely the opposite of that.
I'm from a town called Melbourne, and people are always like, you're not from Australia. I'm like, I didn't say Melbourne. Shut up. So, okay, I have a question. Do you remember, and I know you keep on bringing in these older references here, but
yeah.
Do you remember the first time you ever drank a beer? What was it? And then separately, your first craft beer, if that was different.
Yeah, so first time I ever had some beer was like probably a decent amount was I was about 6 years old. And my dad said I could have a beer if I could open it, and I'm a human creature that used a pair of pliers to open the can of beer, and I had about four sips and passed out.
That is too funny. Oh my god.
And then first craft beer was probably 1990. I think it was probably 95-ish. And it was Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. And I was like, what's wrong with this beer? And it was hops. But I liked what was wrong with it. So, so yeah, 90, 90, probably 95, 96. So drink responsibly and don't be an underage drinker like me.
Well, when was the drinking age then?
Yeah, you could start drinking it too back in the 20s. Like that. So. Yeah, no, it was 21. So six is definitely not 21. And 95, I would have been 19. Mm. So like I said, drink responsibly.
Yeah.
I think, well, Adam, what about you?
Yeah, yeah. This I'm going to set the scene for you. So I'm originally from Kansas. And I was 11 with my brother and cousin sitting on a hood of an El Camino in an alley drinking Coors out of a can, pop top, along with a little dip. And I was 11, oh, and I was nervous because they kept saying, don't swallow your spit, but drink the beer.
That's a lot to like.
Yeah, it was a lot. That's why it's seared in my brain.
I don't even 11. Know if I can do that. Not that I've tried, but.
I mean, the best part of that story is the El Camino.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my god!
Beautiful little scene. I think Sierra Nevada was probably one of my first as well. And it twisted my tongue and wrung it out and thought, this isn't Coors in a can anymore.
Yeah. I mean, Sierra, you know, probably the most ubiquitous craft beer of its time, you know, obviously like Pete's Wicked Ale, which isn't around anymore, but that was one of the early craft entries
but
as well.
Maybe. Is that still considered craft beer?
Yes. So the interesting thing is every year the definition of craft beer changes to include Boston Beer and Sierra Nevada as they increase their capacity because they're founding members of the BA. They are craft beer. They're just making more of it. You know, no one would have thought that they would get as big as they have. You know, they are still using traditional ingredients. They are independently owned. So those are the definitions of it, you know, using the right ingredients, being independent, not, you know, a multinational corporation owned like people, you know, the Sierra Nevada is owned by the Grossmans. They're still, you know, I think Ken's son, I can't remember his name right now, is, you know, running the company now. So Boston Beer now is being run by, or is soon to be run by Sam Calagione from Dogfish Head as part of the buyout deal. He's taking it from Sam Cook. Yes, they are both by definition considered craft beer. Are they micro brewed, you know, less than 2,000 barrels? Your average brewery in the United States, one time the statistic was either 1,500 or 1,000 barrels a year. So no, they're definitely the exception to the rule. So
something that in my head I always personally had lumped with those two was like Brooklyn Brewery.
Yeah, sure.
Is that just me or is that because my dad likes it? And
I'm
from New Jersey.
They're OG. They're OG craft beer. I mean, when I was planning Crank Arm, you read two books, and the book was Steve Lundy's book from Brooklyn Brewing, Sam's book from Dogfish Head. Those were like the sort of Bibles of dudes starting breweries, you know, in their bathtubs or in their backyard, you know, just sort of bootstrapped homegrown brands and the struggles they went through and the challenges, which, you know, resonate with anyone that's trying to get any business open, but especially as someone who, you know, is doing a lot, you know, craft brewing is a little more like wineries or other fermentation, small batch stuff where it's a lifestyle thing. You're not, you know, opening a brewery to become a millionaire. You do it because you love it. It's a passion project. It's something you'll spend, you know, more time and money and effort than you ever would have imagined to get going. So, you know, while there wasn't a how-to book, those were the closest things to it. So, you know, having those sort of things in mind, and they are sort of New Englandish brands, but they were, you know, three of the forerunners, not Sierra, obviously they're West Coast, but forerunners of the craft beer scene that, you know, that brands have lasted as well. So.
Yeah. Cool. And so how has, you know, I know you mentioned that you wanted to be, you know, pedestrian, you know, bicycling friendly, you know, kind of place. What did you kind of initially want for like the vibe when you walked in? And then how has that changed over time? Adam, how have you Have you had any impact on changing that, you know, with your artistic, you know, part that you're bringing in? Like, how did you get, you know, what did you want it to feel like when someone walks in? Like, what did you want that to be like?
So I think the sense and this thing that always comes first and foremost with this brand is community. So I think that is still, you know, now that we're going back to no less restrictions for COVID, well, no restrictions if people are vaccinated, that we are going back to that communal feel. And I think sort of the cans to me sort of represent the fantasy or the greater aspects and the fun aspects of what that community is.
Yeah. Awesome.
Great answer. Very nice.
And so I'm just curious. So if I'm coming in, what would you, you know, what are your staples or what do you, you know, want to push at the moment? Like, do you do flights? Can I get a flight of your favorites? Like, what am I ordering if you're ordering for me?
So we have 4 to 5 core beers. So probably, I mean, what folks usually come in and like most places, like, oh, what kind of hazy IPA do you have? So Road Hazard is our flagship hazy IPA. We also have Long Steady Distance, which is a no coast IPA. So it's got some bitterness, but all the fun and delicious fruity hops in it. White Wall Wheat, 2-time Great American Beer Festival medal winner. Easy Summer Crusher, tastes like grapefruit. Really nice. Unicycle Single Hop Pale Ale, Citra Pale Ale, also always available. And then seasonally, maybe 9 months of the year, we have our Pilsner, Bike Pump Pilsner. So those are like a good place to start. But one of the things that we do that's fun is we make a ton of seasonals a year. Like some years we clock 60 seasonal beers in a year. So basically that equates to a new beer every week. You can try something new. So that's a really fun thing. So usually it's, you know, someone comes in like, oh, what should I try? It's like, well, what do you like? And we'll have something that will hit a palate point for someone. So that's something we definitely take pride in.
Yeah. So, and then Adam B, what are you, when you're going in, what are you drinking? Are you a little biased on some with labels you like better than others, even if it's from a tap? Like, what are you ordering? What are you doing?
Yeah. I'd always prefer grabbing something from the tap for sure. And what's nice is that Adam had the idea of what if we put the labels, the designs next to the names on the board. So that way, you know, if you've recognized it in the store, then you rolled in. I see the photo.
I love when people, I love when they do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, I think that makes a lot of sense and it's very easy because it can be intimidating, especially, you know, when I started there, we had, I don't know, seemed like 10, maybe 12 on tap. And now it looks like there's double that. So you see a menu that, you know, if you're only looking for, you know, like you said, IPAs, you know, now you've got a wide variety of them, you know, and, or, you know, even if I'm with someone that doesn't like beer, you know, they've got you covered there too. So it's definitely easy, you know, they've made it easy. And I think that's the enjoyable part of going in and let me just try something or doing the wheel. But right now I'd say I'm one of those people that are like, oh, look what hazy you got on.
And so then I want to know a little bit more about, you know, how you guys work together. So how long do you usually have to come up with a label? What has maybe been the most challenging or the most fun? Like what kind of stands out? Are you guys, you know, coming up with something awesome together and then you have to brew it? Or, you know, sometimes you're brewing something and then you're just after the fact putting the label together. Like how do you get, how does the beer become what it is, the name become what it is, and then the label get involved? It's a joint question.
For Adam, I would say Adam would say I never give him enough time. Like, yeah, I need tomorrow. I'll say that, like, as far as the naming, in general, like we get a style, we come up with a name, we brew it a few times, and then we can it. So we have it for draft, see how it does, make some tweaks, because, you know, when we put it out in a can, usually after that, we don't tweak it too much unless we do some small batches of it. So usually that's pretty set. Sometimes we will rename some things or even relabel the can. Mm-hmm. But that's sort of already set. And then, you know, I have a description or something and then Adam and I start the process. And, you know, I mean, he can probably speak this more, but I mean, in general, you know, it's a, I'd try to give him a couple weeks, a couple, 3 weeks, if not more, if we've got a long-term project. Sometimes it, I forget to do things and he doesn't have as much time. So,
even when I first visited Grankarm, I could tell right off just from the names, as I asked Mike when I first rolled in, man, who's coming up with the names? Like, ah, Adam usually does that. Man, this guy's on it. And he's already at that time, he was thinking about what the beer is and then how can I incorporate the name that it would make sense and not just, oh, let's make a crazy name and it involves a bike and we'll call it good. You know, so it made it that much more fun and easy when we did the labels of going a step further, like, all right, well, what should the label look like? Should it be bright because the beer is dark? You know, so you get that kind of fun artistic play when you're interacting with it, opposed to just, yeah, we threw something together that we liked. And the idea of being able to have time sometimes is good, but you know, he can give me a week or two and maybe I don't start it till the night before, you know, just, it, sometimes, you know, I've sat there and it flows right out and I think, ooh, this is it. And I can always tell when it, once I send it to Adam, if he emails me back or texts me within 5-10 minutes, we nailed it. But if I don't hear anything and it's mid afternoon, like, all right, I'm already thinking like, what, okay, what does he, what's he not liking? What do we need tweaking? What are we looking at? And you know, sometimes it's a surprise from, oh, I love it, it just is do this, you know, and he's a busy man, but then there are sometimes like, all right, if we do, and I think, oh, here we go. Here we go. It's a new direction.
You know? Well, you know, the thing is too, is sometimes the, it takes me some time to digest it too, because I mean, there's sometimes that visceral feel and you just know, it's sort of like with the way that art and music, very similar for me. Sometimes like you hear something the first time or see it and you're like, oh, that's amazing. That's exactly it. And other times it's like, okay, is it me or is it the art that isn't working right for me? Or, you know, so it's like, take some time to digest it and go, you know, actually this is the right path. So when I don't exactly knee jerk every time, it doesn't mean that it wasn't a home run. It just means that maybe I'm just making sure that I'm interpreting or just gathering my thoughts, because it's like, all right, this is so, you know, recently there was one we did Wheelie Tropical and which is a tropical sour. And I thought it was a home run, like when second he sent it. And then literally he comes back like the next day, he's like, oh, but look what I did with the hibiscus. I added like sprockets to it. And it's like, sweet. There's a little extra there. So, you know, it just depends. One, he nailed it too. I mean, I'm not ever doing anything. I'm bored and slack. But two, it's just the sort of, you know, consuming the art, letting my brain work on it, seeing what I feel, saying, is this 100%? Is there an aspect that doesn't work? Is there something that, you know, for instance, like Brutal Crash, like I loved the design, but the dude didn't have a helmet on. And it's like, you know, I just feel bad if he didn't have a helmet and he had such a bad crash. So, you know, make sure you wear a helmet, guys and girls. Yeah. So it's sort of, you know, it's a process on both ways and the give and take, you know, and I always make sure I tell him that I love what he's doing, but maybe he could love it a little more, you know.
You know how artists need that ego stroke.
Yeah, it's okay.
But I think that's, again, that's the weird beauty of this relationship, because it really is unlike any other client relationship that I've had, where most of them, I need to see something before I can tell you that's not it. And for Adam, it's almost as though he's dreamt about it and this is what it should be. And he can get very detailed and it can be very easy in that realm of, man, let's just do that. Mm-hmm. But it also is crazy because it's his baby. It's his and Mike's baby, where we've created this and now we trust you to put together these thoughts of, that we've got for it. You know, yeah. So then once you see it, it's kind of like, well, you can never beat what the client already has in their head. You know, if they've got an idea and they want it to kind of look like this, I could try anything. It could be the best thing in the world, but it's never going to hit exactly because there's an expectation of, man, this is, I really just see it like this. And there have been lots of labels that I've thought, I've sat down and think, okay, I got it. And we roll through it. And then somebody just sit there and stare or go for a walk or do anything because it's just not coming. I don't know the angle. I don't know what's going to work. And I've tapped into some other artists that I've known over the years that are fantastic illustrators that, I can't get the angle of this dog on a bike. Can you please? And then, you know, an hour later, like, hey, how about this? Like, beautiful. So there's been collaboration around the world from you know, from all starting at Adam's brain to me tapping into other resources that I don't want to just give him some run of the mill copy of something else. So let's pull from other people's brains and make sure it's exactly what we want.
And that process you described is very much how like naming the beers happens too, is that, you know, sometimes it just comes right out and other times it's very much like beating my head on a wall and then like just walking away from it. And then like, I've got it, the best name in the world. And then you look on Untappd and somebody used it on some brewery that like has nothing to do with cycling or anything else. And you're like, why did you name your beer, you know, Riding on a Sunset or something, whatever it is, or Fixie or what, something that would really make sense.
Do you then stay away from those names or will you still use
them? Yeah, well, you know, I'm very conscious of intellectual property for both visually and, you know, written. I mean, that's somebody's trademark. That's a thing they came up with. You know, we want to be original. We have to be. I mean, in fact, it's an offense. I mean, you can get in a lot of trouble for it. Some people pride themselves in getting cease and desist.
But if you have if you come out with a beer and they didn't like trademark it or anything, they just happen to have one, that's not a problem, right?
It is. If some the highest standard of a trademark is first use. So whoever uses it in your industry first is the priority, whether it's been
like
trademarked
a
or not.
Style beer.
Doesn't matter. It's actually doesn't even matter if it's not beer. If it's a liquid that's on a shelf, it is considered in the same category. So if someone named a soda Bike Pump at this point right now, someone named Bike Pump PepsiCo or something, whatever they want to call it, they can't name it that. We can, you know, we send a nice letter saying, hey, you know, that's already used. Sorry about that. And then they're like, oh, well, we're in a different state. We're seltzer water. It's like, nope. Well, you're in the United States and you're on the same, you know, in some places you're on the same shelf as our beverage, therefore it's a protected thing. So trademarks,
because I do feel like I come across a bunch of the same named ones before, but I guess if you want to do it well and you want to do it right, you can't do that.
Yeah. And so if the one thing about trademark that's interesting is if you don't enforce your trademark, meaning if you you were the first ones to use it and you don't enforce it, send that letter saying, hey, you're on notice, we've used it, then it becomes sort of a community thing. But if so, say there's like 10 things of the same name of the beer, then it becomes sort of like community access and anyone can use it. Like Rickshaw is like that, for instance. We didn't realize that there were people that used it before us and after. It was one of our first named beers, but it's not a trademarkable thing because it's become sort of community property because of the number of times it's been used.
Wait, I just looked up out of curiosity because of who I am. Training Wheels.
Yeah, it's been used.
And it's been used a lot. But then I'm seeing then Fixed Gear Brewing. That's funny. Yep. They're in Canada.
Yep. Yeah, so there's a lot of names that are, you know, people are like, that, this would be a great name for a beer. It's like, yes, Kickstand would be a great name for a beer. It's been used a dozen times.
Are you against using it though, if it's, you know, been used multiple times, and then is that community?
Yeah, I mean, once again, it goes back to something that we can protect as well and you know, use in good faith. So, you know, if it's something, you know, something like Road Hazard becomes the hit that it is and sell as much beer as it does. Like if somebody came along and tried to use that, or we were using it and other people had before, then, you know, there's a potential for a rebrand and a lawsuit, which is just, you know, costly and something that's avoidable by a search on the internet and a search through Untappd. You can literally figure out if it's been used before.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pretty easy thing to do on the front end, even if you've racked your brain with ideas.
Yeah. How has, you know, Untappd and social media had any or what impact on your business, the way you, you know, plan events or, you know, can releases or anything? Like, has that had an impact, you think, on the way that you run your brewery?
I think it's a love-hate relationship. And I think I'd tell the folks who are Untappd this too. One, we use Untappd in the tap room for our menu boards because it's very easy to use. But two, the issue with Untappd is that, you know, it's a review system by people that are not experts and not using it the way. I guess it's in the way that people use Untappd that maybe it's a double-edged sword. One, there's breweries that can make delicious beer, and because they're not known, or they'll get us. I don't like Gose's, 1 star. Well, that's not rating a beer. That's your preference, but that's how the consumers decided to use it, right? Well, then when I go to beer buyers, they'll say, well, your Gose has 2.5 stars. What's wrong with it? I'm like, well, that's because 10 people didn't like it. This isn't a literal thing. I'm not going to go into literal stuff, but like, oh, well, your Gose only has 2.5 stars, so I'm not going to buy it from you. Or a customer looks up your rating on that beer and goes, oh, this is this many. I was like, why don't you have a sip of it first and see if you like that style, see if you like it. And they're like, oh, I love it. Well, great. So, you know, it's a subjective world that's become a commodity, like a high untapped score as a point of pride. I mean, it's just like anything else. It's like,
but that also could just mean it's easy to drink for the regular person.
Correct. So I guess that's the thing, is that they're not professional beer rate, you know, judges, and they judge beer, and we both benefit, and sometimes it's an attractor. I mean, I look at it like a Yelp review. Not quite as bad as a Yelp review, but like, because people usually go to Yelp to complain. Maybe a Google review is a better way to put it, because people go on there and give you the good, the bad, the ugly, depending on what it is. So, you know, non-professional people rating a thing usually is not the most honest interpretation of it.
I mean, when I first got Untappd, I was in like this beers course, and we're trying maybe like, you know, 6, 9 or something beers a day. And I was using it for me personally to figure out what kind of beer I liked. And so if I have like, I mean, you know, and my professor he was giving us like great beer, you know, I mean, except for the bad beer day when he was like purposely making things gross. But it was like, you know, we had like some sort of anything super malty or any stout or something. I'd be like 1. And that was for me. And then I didn't realize what I was doing. But now I'm scared to give anyone anything other than a 5, because I'm like, I don't want them to dislike me.
Yeah. And it's an interesting thing, right? Because it's like, you know, ultimately that app is for you, but it does have an effect on the brewery. But like, you can't take it personal, but it is your business. And, you know, your overall rating. And that's the other thing, is that, you know, there are hype breweries that like people like, well, it's X hype brewery. I'm not going to name names. I can't give them 1 star. What if the beer was a 1 star beer? Like, truly was, you know? So it's, like I said, it's love hate. Like it's both a really good tool for us to put our beers on the board, use the artwork, you know, change it from anywhere. And then it's up there with all the data, the pricing, all that. But then there's also the good comes with the bad with any other tool. So I guess that's my view on Untappd. And I mean, I think like, you know, for some brewers particularly, they take it very personally, because that, you know, they brewed a beer that was maybe stylistically flawless, and you know, that 1 star, I don't like pilsners.
Yeah. It would be interesting if there could be like, you know, the public rating and like the top 1% of Untappd people rating or something.
I mean, but then also people, you know, I sort of, if we want to look at how things are truly, truly judged, then blind tasting is the best. So, you know, BJCP, GABF, so basically the World Beer Cup and the Great American Beer Festival, because look, people's perception of beer is colored by branding. That's what we're talking about, right? So if your favorite brewery is great at branding and that brand is known to be, you know, hyper awesome, you're going to be more, you know, give them a better score. If you're a blind tasting judge that's going for true to style, is this the greatest representation of it? Like, you know, then that's the true, you know, judge of the quality of the beer. Not necessarily, you know, look, the people that buy your beer are the ultimate judges. And if they buy it again and again, then you've won, right? You've been judged worthy. So if they don't like your beer, they're not going to buy your beer. But if you're looking for stylistically and true to colors and things of that nature, you know, the blind tasting is truly it, which is not the world we live in. Like, people don't walk into a brewery and go, give me 5 of your beers and put a blindfold on and try and buy 5 of some other random beers. That's not how most people judge it.
Yeah, I walk in and I look at the to-go cans and I go, what's the prettiest?
And that's fair.
That is literally what I do.
This is why Adam has a job. Make it pretty, Adam, or else.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so, sorry, we're going on like an hour here, so I'm trying to not keep you that long. We can wrap up. But I just want to say, like, you know, I mean, I just love what you guys do. I think you have the cool, like, such great cans. You have, you know, it looks like you guys are always having fun. And I think, you know, that's, you know, part of the best part about this industry and great breweries is that, I mean, honestly, I went to this brewery recently and like the people that owned it and worked there, they were like the most, it was like pulling teeth trying to talk to them. And I was like, do you like being here? Like, do you like beer? Like, do you want to be here? And it really came across in like the whole decor of the place, the customers and everyone. And so, you know, you guys are the opposite. I feel like, you know, through even what I can see online and everything, like, I mean, I wish I could be there today, but like,
you can ride your bike here.
You know, it looks like everyone's just having fun. Oh, ride my bike up there.
Take your time.
Oh my God. No. I gotta move somewhat soon. So I'm in Atlanta now. I gotta come up to, like New York, New Jersey. And when I drive up, I'm going to see if I can do like a big brewery tour on my way up.
Awesome.
And so I'll
come see us.
Try and stop by. Yeah. But yeah, it just looks like you guys are having so much fun. Everything you do is, you know, bright, colorful. You can tell there's people around, the communities, the dogs. If you're a brewery and you don't allow dogs, you don't have a heart, in my opinion.
You know, the sad thing was, is for a while, we weren't able to have dogs because of state law.
Oh, really?
And talk about a really frustrating thing that we had no control over, where people would like get upset and we're like, you know, you hate dogs. No, I have a dog at home. Like, I want to bring them. I can't. So the law changed and we're, you know, now the dogs are back and we're really happy to have them.
Yeah. Was that all?
But yeah. It was unfortunate though, but the luckily government worked the way it should and the people voted and we ended up with dogs. So.
That's awesome. Was that all of North Carolina or?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Well, yep. So then they couldn't be like, no, the place down the street lets us. Cause that would be annoying.
Yeah, no. Well, and that was the thing, was that like some places weren't enforcing the law. So that made us like, well, they did it. It's like, well, yep. We're just trying to follow the rules and stay in business. Yeah. Sorry about that.
Sorry about that one. Well, it was so great to talk to you guys. Is there anything that you want to, you know, plug or, you know, anything you want to mention that you have coming up soon that you're really excited about and that you just want to kind of promote or something?
Well, I just want to just take a minute to say thank you for having us on here and, you know, thank Adam for the awesome collaboration we have. I mean, it's been, you know, a thing, it's been a brand transformation from, you know, initially the black and yellow, you like the yellow, but like it was very, you know, contrasted there with what we've become. And then, you know, as we sort of relaunched the branch under the or brand under the Road Hazard sort of flagship, and you know, I think that's really takes on our personality more than a two-tonal sort of, you know, color scheme. So, you know, thank you for that. And then, you know, we're just, you know, chugging along in the back end of, you know, hopefully the back end of this, pandemic. So thanks to everyone that supported us over the past year. And like, that's another thing is that like last year cans were so important to us because we couldn't have people in the building. So that, you know, we released more cans than we've ever done last mm-hmm. year in both volume and in brand differentials. So, yeah, just, I think more than anything, just thank you.
Yeah, of course. Oh man, I actually just got chills thinking about like when it was like initial quarantine and I stopped by a brewery and I, you know, picked up like a 4-pack and I was like, this makes me feel like, I don't know, something like,
yeah. You're not quite missing out. That you can still take it home, still have that sense of, it's like a Friday. Still getting that crinkle beer.
And then Adam, with Saturday's Gravy and everything, is there anything that you want to, where can people follow you? Like, what are you doing? What's going on?
most of it's just on Instagram. So Saturday's Gravy is the Instagram poll, but really I've just focused everything on Crank Arm pretty much, you know, started off kind of a little bit of everything, anything that anyone needed. And then it was probably just more me of thinking, man, this is more fun. I'd much rather just do this. So whatever I can do with Crank Arm, I've just been pumping it out. I feel like almost every other week I get an email from him saying, all right, new can.
Yeah. I mean, gosh, as an artist, I can't imagine like a more fun, as long as you're not like super traditional in your technique and stuff. But like, what more fun clients and industry is there?
Yeah, exactly. I'm real quick. I remember telling Mike the brewer, because he was saying, man, what are you excited to do these new cans? And like, man, if if we can have people pause before they throw it away, or when they crumple it, they feel just a little bit bad, then we got them. So let's aim for that, you know, where they almost just want to keep it because I enjoyed the beer and I'm going to get more.
But dang, look at that can.
Weird. Yeah, it feels weird to throw this art away.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's what I love. Do you guys peel them off and hang them anywhere, or have like magnets out of them or something?
We had folks make candles out of them. I keep one of every can and have like a shelf at my house for it. I think one day I'll move that museum to the brewery and sort of have like a little shelf of the, you know, the, I think I have everything. I'm not 100% sure, but I think I do. So you can sort of show the evolution and the release date, maybe like do a little like, you know, date. This was released on this date first, and then to sort of show the evolution or the progression, yeah, or just the, you know, the unification of the, and the brand, identity through cans. You know,
so. Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much. I had so much fun talking to you. I'm going to let you go now. I know you're open and, got people to serve and beer to brew and labels to design. So
there we go.
It was so awesome talking to you guys. I really, really appreciate it. And I really can't wait to stop by, because I need some cans in my hand and I need, and yeah, I just need to check the place out and be there, but I'm not getting on anyone's bike. So.
All right. Fair enough. Well, we look forward to it. Let us know when you're coming.
All right. Yeah, bye, definitely. Adams.
All right.
Thank you.
See you later, Jenna.
Bye. Have a great day.
You too.
So we just ended the interview with Adam and Adam with Crank Arm Brewing, and that was a great conversation. And I quickly want to mention, I think in the intro I had mentioned Adam Balding, the artist's company called Sunday Gravy. It's, as he mentioned, obviously Saturday Gravy. I think I just perpetually have Sunday Candy by chance stuck in my head. And I think that's where that came from. Anyways, but that was such an awesome interview. I love hearing about how they work together. I feel like it's very clear that they have a lot of fun working together. And I thought it was interesting that Adam Balding started off as a bartender for them. And I just think that's super fun because, you know, obviously he loved the beer first, but also, you know, made that relationship. And I love that. So I really just loved hearing kind of what can go into their crazy cans, because some of them are literally like so nonsensical. They're like the most insane, crazy, whimsy designs, but it totally works. And it's so fun to hear what goes into that and like what weird things they're just trying to put on cans. But yeah, they were so exciting, passionate about what they do. I really can't wait until I have an opportunity to stop by. Hopefully when I'm in Atlanta now, gonna have to go back up home to like New Jersey, New York area. And so when I move back, I'm gonna do a drive and I hope I can just hit a ton of breweries along the way. And hopefully there'll be one of them. And yeah, they were, I will say, very patient with me. I kept asking follow-up questions and veering from the main topics, and they just kept going with it. So I really appreciate that. They were awesome. And it was also just kind of crazy to hear even more about how much the pandemic affected cans themselves and how it changed the craft industry from a canning perspective, because, like, you know, places that would have never canned before now are. People that, you know, breweries that weren't focused on to-go cans now are. And then with that comes the art, and with that comes everything else. And it's just, it's fascinating how these things change. I mean, obviously the whole world changed, but in like small specific ways, like we now have more beer can art because of COVID. Like, I don't know, it's weird. But yeah, they were really great to talk to. That was a lot of fun. And I hope you enjoyed this episode. Friendly reminder, please do me a solid. I'd appreciate it. If you could please hit subscribe or follow or whatever the button says on whatever app you are listening to this on. If you feel so inclined to leave a review, please go for it. And follow Beer Can Lover on Instagram to see all the visual components that go along with each episode. And any questions, comments, concerns, recommendations, really anything, drop an email to pod@beercanlover.com. So pod@beercanlover.com to let me know what you're thinking. If there's someone you think I should have on, I will do my very best. If you think that, like, if there's a question that you want me to ask that I haven't been asking, please let me know. I'd love to do that. I'm asking, you know, the questions that I'm curious about. But what are you curious about? I think the same things. I hope the same things. But I don't know. So drop me an email. Slide in my DMs. Do whatever you want to do. But what's most important is that I will see you next time for our next interview. Stay tuned. Goodbye. Thanks.